Hello, everybody. Welcome back to My Animated Life. I'm your host, Declan Mangan. I am a sophomore and I have a filmmaking major. What we do on here, for those who haven't seen the show yet, we discuss animated subjects and try and make people understand animation being a very important medium in our current Hollywood system. So for today, we're going to be going back to Netflix. This one is currently the first ongoing show I'm going to be talking about, and that show is Love, Death, and Robots. The creators are David Fincher. For some of those you may know, David Fincher is the director of The Social Network, Mindhunters, his upcoming movie The Killer, and Tim Miller also is involved, and he's probably the most prominent one. He was the one who originally came up with the idea. And for those who don't know Tim Miller, he directed Deadpool. He produced Sonic the Hedgehog. Let me think, what else did he do? He directed the recent Terminator movie that people didn't really like. But he mainly produces the show on his own production company known as Blur Studios, which is a animation company that he has, which worked on a few Sonic games and a few Sonic movie, and basically that's about the history. So now we're gonna get into the show history. The show originally started out as a reboot to the magazine adaptions of Heavy Metal, which was a R-rated animated anthology movie from the 1981 era. This reboot was announced in 2008, 8 years after the sequel, which got negative reviews, Heavy Metal 2000. But the basic idea of it, it's a Canadian-based sci-fi fantasy anthology magazine made by Leonard Mogul. The gist of it is it's different sci-fi short stories all tied together with a specific theme. So, for example, the first movie being the specific theme of evil being the sum of evil. Anyway, the reboot would have boasted a $50 million budget with a director lineup at the time, including big names like Del Toro. You may know of him, recent animation advocate and animated winner for Del Toro's Pinocchio. Tim Miller, already mentioned, same with David Fincher. James Cameron, no need to explain him. He did Avatar. Zack Snyder, Justice League, Army of the Dead, upcoming Rebel Moon. Kevin Eastman, I think that's one of the co-creators of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like before the 80s show and whatnot. Gore Verbinski, he's no chop suey. He made Rango, and he's currently working on a few other animated movies with his frequent cinematographer, Roger Deakins. Mark Osborne, I put it on here. I don't know who Mark Osborne is. And Jeff Fowler, he had an animated nominated short called Go for Broke, but he is now more well known for being the director of Sonic, Sonic 2, the Knuckles movie stuff. And the last one, Rob Zombie, who was a heavy metal artist, now turned movie director. He did the 2008 Halloween and Halloween sequel, and he also did a direct-to-DVD adaption of The Munsters. The Heavy Metal reboot was expected to have 8 or 9 short segments. that would probably be running in a movie time. Paramount was going to be the distributor, but because of David Fincher's, because of beef between him and his movie, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, they basically just, like, they were like, nope, we're done with heavy metal. Just get it out of here. So they eventually landed the production at Columbia Pictures, a subsidiary of Sony. Some other tidbits of information. Kevin Eastman, the TMNT guy, revealed he and Jack Black reunited for their own shorts. And James Cameron and David Fincher was interested in becoming executive producers more than directors. However, in 2009, the movie was practically dead, as no distributors, production companies, or even directors, for that matter, were interested in making this new heavy metal. Then, introducing a new person into this star-studded beginnings of Love, Death, and Robots, Comic-Con 2011. Robert Rodriguez, you may know him for Spy Kid, Shark Boy and Lava Girl, Sin City. Just basically B-movie, Mexican budget, low-budget movies. He confirmed at Comic-Con that he bought the rights to heavy metal and planned to make the movie with his production company, Quick Draw Studios. Then he tried to make it into a TV show instead through his own TV service, but it fell through, and Robert Rodriguez eventually sold the rights for heavy metal. So, cut to a few years later, Netflix eventually got involved with heavy metal and picked up the series. To quote Tim Miller, "Well, David Fincher and I had tried to get a heavy metal film made for years and years. I mean, hundreds of meetings. The original movie came out in 1982, and it was very inspirational to many animators who wanted to do adult animation. So when I met David, we wanted to do something together, and we said, what about doing a new heavy metal film? Because he was an animation fan, but the world was not ready for it then. But in the 10 years that we had meetings and tried to get the project going, the world came around to see adult animation as viable, and Netflix was the one that was willing to take a chance. And so here we are." Netflix gave the team complete control over their show, which led them to find a major variety in teams of animation teams of so many things, from 3D to 2D animation studios in Spanish countries, Canada, United States, Africa, so much more. David Fincher wanted to break free from the status of animation needing to be a half hour or hour long ran show, because if you look at Love, Death, and Robots, the shows and the shorts that they produce are like fluctuating. It could be 9 minutes, it can be 20 minutes, it could even be 15 minutes. The rest is history with Love, Death, and Robots. Now we're getting into details. It came out in 2019, and it is still running throughout our current years. Three seasons have already been released, with a fourth already renewed in August of last year. But as of this writing, we don't know if they're gonna write it off as a tax write-off, because that's the popular thing at the time. But they probably won't, because it is a major award magnet. So far, it's boasted 13 Primetime Emmys and 8 Annie Awards. That's pretty impressive for a series of shorts. Anyway, I could, for the cast, there is a lot of actors ranging from celebrities to voice actors, but the IMDb page is way too long. But I don't want to leave you guys hanging high and dry. So here's a few recognizable names I was able to find that were in a couple of the episodes. This includes Michael B. Jordan, Rosario Dawson, who was just in Ahsoka, and Craig Ferguson. He played Gobber in How to Train a Dragon. Dan Stevens, you may know of him from Downton Abbey or the remake of Beauty and the Beast. Maurice LaMarche, you may know him on Futurama, but he also played Pinky in Pinky and the Brain. Not Pinky, he played the Brain in Pinky and the Brain. Nolan North, of course, he played Nathan Drake, and his equal, Troy Baker, who... Shit, I'm trying to think. What did Troy Baker do? He was also in Uncharted, but he's in a lot of Telltale games. And he played Joel in The Last of Us, did the mocap and voiced him for the 2013 game. Chris Parnell, you may know of him from Rick and Morty as Jerry or the businessman in Archer. Seth Green, you may know him as the creator of Robot Chicken, another anthology animated show, sketch thing, but he also voices Chris on Family Guy. Steve Bloom, who you may know as the Toonami host, but he also was the voice of Sub-Zero in Mortal Kombat X and 11. And he also played Baraka as well. And Joel McHale, who's a very famous TV actor. Anyway, there's really only the simple plot to go over because it's an anthology. It's easy to go over. A season overall consists of multiple shorts that focuses on one subject or two subjects at once, with the main focuses being on love, which is basically romance, love for items, brother in arms, siblingship, death, which includes mutilation, explosions, aliens, and massacres at an absolute level, or just robots or future subjects, just robots or the concepts of what can happen with this technology we can have. It's basically a warning call. Anyway, what makes this show amazing to me? I think with the free reign the creatives had, I feel they had had great chances to make stories that are original based on previous short stories, but being able to be told in different animation formations. And it's a lot of those short stories and a lot of those original ideas are half of the reason why these shorts are great. Let's see. While some people may not like this maturity, but I would argue there is some chance that they are able to tackle so many concepts, and some of those concepts include society, life, death, purpose, population, greed, sacrifice, technology, existentialism, and so much more. And with the animation, they can do a lot with it and play around with all these different stylization choices, making the stories feel fresh with their art styles, original with some very cool designs, and creative with these vibrant, beautiful animations. With the originality point, this is a great way to get specific stories that may not make great shows or movies. They have as long or as short to tell these stories that are so great and awesome. Let's see. And they're just so bite-sized. Some of those shorts do leave you wanting more. Like some of these are really good short stories, but Some of them are shorts where you're like, maybe this is a good reason why it's a short. But at the same time, there's like other shorts that are like, dang, I want an episode of that. I want a show of that or something. So the company right now, let's see. Since we kind of went through some of the basics of the show, I want to talk about a few of my favorite shorts that they've released so far. And I'm going to break down the synopsis of some of them. And maybe since we do have some time, maybe I'll explain why I find them so funny or great. So the first shorts, I say shorts because it had two shorts so far. One of them was in season one, and then one was in the most recent season. And it's based on a few short stories that are about three, well, the title first. They're both titled Three Robots. And the focus is the three robots going on a long, long road trip through the remains of a long extinct human society. And they just look around cities and all over Earth to see what their culture was like and see why they went in extinct in the first place. And that one is a mix of very funny comedic timing and just a overall sense of dread of, like, this could have been prevented, but because of hubris, it wasn't. And it was just it's a great blend for a synopsis like that, because the three robots are really, really funny. There's one that looks like a baby that has like a backpack. One's very tall, has a black voice. And the other one is just Siri on wheels. It's just Siri on wheels. And then the next short I like is another season one short called Beyond the Aquila Rift. If you like your sci-fi horror, this one's for you. It focuses on a space crew facing tons of turbulence after going into cryo sleep. The commander in chief in charge runs into an old friend / old flame. And by old flame, you can say they have sex a lot. And it's eventually revealed that there might be more to their pit stop. And that's all I'll reveal there, because that twist, I saw for the first time, I was like, what the fuck? Jesus Christ! It's just such a creepy, slow burn episode that has erotica, horror, suspense, mystery, thrilling shit. It's great. Anyway, I lumped these two together because they're both made by the same creator. The Witness from season one and Jabaro from season three. And these are created by a recent Academy Award winning short animated film winner, Alberto Meglio, who the short he made, that one animated short film, was The Windshield Wiper, which also is a great short. It's basically like a look at love and like how different it can be and how everybody just wants it. But at the same time, there's people out there in the world that don't even notice that because, well, they just don't notice it. Anyway, The Witness and Jabaro are both original ideas made by Alberto. And the first of them focuses on a woman who tries to run away from a killer who she sees murder somebody. And this one is very Spider-Verse. Like, you can tell this is someone who worked on Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse with the comic, the pop style of animation, the movements, the colors. You can tell he worked on it. But at the same time, it's so much more, well, Spider-Verse is adult, but I also want to say that there's so much terror and so much threat to it. And also a word of warning, this one has some tits, so be careful with that if you're squeamish around nudity. Anyway, the Jabaro focuses, I would say this is probably more beautiful than The Witness. It's a story that's told with ballet, like really great performance ballet. Like they had to rehearse it all the damn day, and they had to perfect what it looked like. Anyway, the story itself is about a deaf Spaniard warrior and a beautiful siren covered in jewels, necklaces, and gold. And basically, it's mainly just about that relationship. Like, you learn a little bit more about the deaf guy who is named Jabaro and the siren, and just how interesting she is and how she got all those jewels, those necklaces and gold, and why exactly is Jabaro there. All right, this one's my favorite one of season one. It's called Good Hunting, and I like it because of the storytelling. It's very folkish. It's very mystical. It's very, it's a very interesting world. I loved it. Basically, it focuses on a Chinese folk love story between a human who's a son of a spirit hunter adapting to the steampunking of his home in Hong Kong, and a Chinese woman that's a spirit known as a Huli Jing, which is basically humans who can turn into foxes, or they can shapeshift, and they basically take away a male soul after like sex and whatnot. And basically, she struggles to adjust to the steampunking, because with technology, the magic that she needs is dying, and she can't rely on it so much. And that one is just such a beautiful tale. It has probably my favorite animation art style. It has probably my favorite messaging, where like she it's just such a beautiful story, but at the same time it's just so interesting. I would love to see more of Good Hunting's world and whatnot. People really like this one. It's called Zima Blue. It was very, very well loved, and that one's about a well-known artist that is getting interviewed by a reporter for the first time. And what that entails basically reveals the creative process of this unknown enigma of an artist. And that one has probably my favorite stylization. It's very, how do I describe it? You know that movie, you know that Netflix show that just came out, Agent Elvis? It's kind of the same art style of that. Anyway, all right, getting a little less severe or existential. This one's called Alternate Histories, which is a season one episode. This story focuses on a company service that looks at ways certain historical events and how the world would have been changed if these specific scenarios were alternated. So the main focus of it is mainly what if Hitler died before World War II, and it gets balls to the wall funny. Some of these deaths include getting hit by Jell-O, dying from sex with hookers, or getting ran over by a horse coach. This one's just a little humorous because it's it gets very abnormal. Like, again, he dies from Jell-O. let that sink in. And there's like a whole story around it where they focus on what would happen if that happened. So like they find out DiGiallo is like a signal from these aliens who or like a signal or of something, and they use it to win World War One, and it's just hilarious to me. Anyway, this one's also my favorite. It's a season two episode. It's called Pup Squad. That sounds fun. Let me tell you, it isn't fun, but it's really good. It focuses on a world where the high class can be immortal forever. They just have to take like a medicine or something like that. But the catch is you aren't able to reproduce any children. But they hire these cops that regulate the populations down below because it's very messy, very polluted, very Blade Runner-like. And these cops regulate the population by, let's just say, taking care of the population in very violent ways. But the main story is one cop starts wondering what he is doing, if what he is doing is good for society, or if it's bad because you're taking away something like parenthood. That one just has a great message. It has great duality, and it's just the world itself is something I did not even think of. It's very Blade Runner, if you guys like Blade Runner. The next one, this one's very action-oriented. It's a fantastic, futuristic bounty hunting episode of season two. It focuses on an old man being hunted down by everybody in a galaxy. But the main question is, why are those pursuing him interested in tracking him down? And I'll leave it at that. There's a lot of great revealings of it all. And, think Han Solo's character put together with Wolverine's powers and the power of immortality. And then it's just such a very cool scene. It's awesome. This next one's a little existential. It's called The Drowned Giant. It's from season two. The story focuses on basically phenomenons becoming less and less exciting and people getting disinterested in rarities. Basically, it's about a professor examining a strange, washed up, giant nude person and how to commute and like how fascinated he is by the community being like, oh, this thing's awesome, I love it, to becoming a hangout spot, to them just butchering it and being like, yeah, this thing is a eyesore, just get it out of the way. That one is just such a really cool, it's sad, but it definitely has great messagings of abnormalities getting less abnormal. Season three episode. This one's called Bad Traveling, and this one's made by Dave Fincher himself. And if you recognize a synopsis like this, you'll probably say like, hey, this sounds like something very Dave Fincher. Basically, the story focuses on a ship crew out at sea trying to deal with a significant giant creature of the deep sea, and how one crew member goes out of his way to keep the many safe, then let the thing get what it wants, which is kill the entire human race. And that is very Dave Fincher. If you like how he built tension in Mindstopper, then you're going to love Bat Traveling. This one's the next one is the funniest episode. It's directed by Jeff Fowler, who I mentioned. He did Sonic the Hedgehog 1, 2. He's doing 3, and he's doing the Knuckles show on Paramount Plus. But the basic idea of it is... the basic synopsis is this is a short that focuses on a tiny human race fighting a zombie apocalypse. And basically they all have like chipmunk voices. They all go really fast, and just the way it ends is just hilarious to me. But at the same time, it's kind of sad because it's like, out of one entire planet of Earth, we're just one little speck in the galaxy. And if Earth were to die, it wouldn't really have any impact. But it still is a very funny episode. The next one's like very 1980s action Rambo style. It's also probably my, we're not there yet. This one's the most badass episode, I'll say, which focuses on United States Special Forces team, a United States Special Forces team trying to face off against a ravenous killing machine that seems nearly impossible to destroy. It's able to balance this horrific creature, but at the same time, it has probably my favorite dynamics of the episode, where it's just these Army Corps people just being super snarky and super cynical and just not getting along with one another, but at the same time, they do get along. It's very... I wouldn't consider it like Rambo. I would say it's like Predator somewhat. And then the last episode I like, it's called Mason's Rats. It's my favorite of season 3. It's about an old Scottish farmer dealing with an advanced society of rats hiding in his barn. Basically, the way he tries to deal with that is he just uses expensive but effective destroying machines. But let's just say he then realizes, oh shit, I'm killing a society. I don't feel bad. I feel bad. So it ends as probably the sweetest conclusion of the entire series thus far. And it's a pretty gruesome episode, but it's very heartwarming. It's very funny, but at the same time, it's like, Jesus Christ, this is kind of fatal. Anyway, those are some of my favorite episodes of Love, Death, and Robots. I didn't talk about all of them. I just talked about a few of them. There's some other great ones you might like that are all in the 3 seasons. But out of the entire list, those are the ones I liked. Anyway, Love, Death, and Robots has the chance to build on so many ideas by utilizing cool animation and the changes in time, like how long the show is or the short is. The stories can be funny, be complex, gloomy, depressing, intricate, and just overall have a sense of creative stories that I think has infinite rewatchability. Like, while I was researching this yesterday, I was like, damn, I kind of want to watch some of these episodes again. It's that good. Content warning. There is a lot of gore, cursing, and sex. So you might, if you're squeamish with blood, this might not be fun for you. Cursing, they like to throw around a lot of bad words. And, the sex can get pretty graphic. Let's just say sex can be, sex in this show can be lumped into nudity, which includes showing booba and pee-pee. So if you don't like seeing nudity, you might have to bow out. And also, if you're someone who's like, oh, if you like living your life, this show does get a little existential with its storytelling. And some of those episodes made me go like, oh, God. Oh, God. Is that how we are? Netflix, like BoJack Horseman before it. By the way, we're trying to figure out the first episode. That's why you guys haven't seen it yet. Netflix has it up on their website. Not their website, their streaming service. It's accessible. Hold on. All acceptable watches, Netflix. These shorts all are accessible watches that fluctuate in tone, animation style, and even writing. Anyway, this has been my animated life. Tune in next week, because we're going to be talking about a very not very popular, but well-known DreamWorks TV trilogy / movie on Netflix with a very, very special guest. I can't wait to have her on. You get to learn a little bit about the animation industry from a really good friend of mine. Anyway, this has been Declan, and you got a glimpse into my animated life. Toodles.